All right, back on the Young Turks post-game show, Brett and Hannah with you guys. I'm also here. I think you know that.
It's true. I'll vouch.
So I was in DC from Wednesday evening to Saturday evening. Yes, that's a while. That's a while. So I had some panels at Online News Association, which is a little gangbusters. If you've never heard of it, it's you're going to be shocked to find out it's for people who work in online news. And it's become gigantic. They had over 3,000 people. It like doubled in the last year. And so the first panel was moderated by Brian Stelter from CNN. It was me, a reporter from New York Times, NPR recently, and a really great reporter from Alabama. But you have to say Alabama. And she talked about local news, etc. Anyway, great, a huge, Jesus, I mean,
AL.com, man.
Yeah,
they got some good local reporting in Alabama.
Yeah, that they do, as I found out. So gigantic conference, it was lovely. I did one on online news, a panel on online news on Saturday with Atlantic, Vox, and some others. Anyway, okay, so that's lovely. Okay, that's why I went. Then I went and had some meetings, largely secret meetings. Those are also fun.
That's like spooky, but also like intriguing. What do you mean by secret meetings?
Okay, with allies, political allies, and then some folks that I know in media. Those are not allies; they're just interesting conversations.
Gotcha.
Okay, so let me. This leads to what I love and hate about DC. So what I love is the city. Oh, it's so fucking cool. So it's gorgeous, the statues and the history and the buildings. I never get tired of it. I'm never not amazed by it. And then you're inside the bowels of the Capitol and you're going from Cannon to Longworth or whatever you're doing. And you're in these tunnels and then you're in these old rooms and having whispering political conversations. And I'm like, oh. Where's Michael Schur when you need him?
Yeah, right.
Right? Like I don't know anyone who enjoys that more than me, other than maybe Michael and maybe Ben. Right? So I love DC. Okay, so how do I hate it? Oh, they're in such a bubble. It's maddening. It's maddening the bubble that they're in. So not the progressive allies, but you can tell by the reaction to the rest of the folks in DC, almost everyone else, no one means harm. No one, like I never met with anybody who was a bad guy. It wasn't like a Machiavellian consultant who was looking to rip people off or whatever. No such thing at all. All good people. But groupthink is there is no progressive movement. It poses no threat at all to Washington. The establishment will just keep on going exactly the way that it's been going, and that progressives have no leaders outside of Bernie. And some of it is super understandable. There's almost no Bernie people on TV. So there's Nina Turner that goes on CNN every once in a while. There's kind of Van Jones, mainly Van Jones, right? And then we're almost out, you know? And then there's probably, no joke, I don't think it's a hyperbole, probably about 150 people that voted for Hillary Clinton. So just think about that, right? So they say, well, where are your stars? Well, CNN and MSNBC wouldn't put them on, right? They wouldn't put any of them on. So how do they get to be stars in that world? And so it's this vicious cycle. And then there's another vicious cycle. Okay, so I talked about this on the show before I left. Politico ran an article about how the Democrats are not being primaried at all. And I'm like, but just Democrats are running 15 primaries. And some of them are in Republican seats, so it's a Democratic primary, but he's got a right to it, right? Why does the establishment Democrat have more of a right than the progressive Democrat? That doesn't make sense. Some are against Democratic incumbents, which they hate. Everybody believes is counterproductive, etc. I don't think that's remotely true. And so why do they say that it doesn't exist when it does? because their only metric is not just how much money you raise, but like, does it come from big donor sources? Which in their minds they think, well, that's, you could repeat that. That's a, you could have a, you know, a source of significant money there. Small donors, that's shout shout, right? So only Bernie's ever pulled that off. So what is that set up? That sets up a system of rewarding and incentivizing corruption. Because if you raise big money from big donors, they write about you like you're a legitimate candidate. If you don't raise big money from big donors, they write about you as a non-legitimate candidate, or worse yet, never ever write about you. So that is prevalent. That is Washington today. So we got to disrupt that somehow, but we got to deal with the Washington we have, not the one we wish we had.
So the big donors, are those like Wall Street sources? Like, who are the big donors?
So that's a great question, because it's not, it's not just Wall Street and industry and etc. But it's also unions. If you have the unions on your side, then you're legitimate. But a lot of the unions have also calcified, and a lot of them don't want money out of politics. A lot of them don't want real change. And I think that is terribly, terribly counterproductive. And the nurses union is wonderful, and they fight back, and they're real progressives. But so if you don't have big companies or big unions behind you, they're like, yeah, whatever, you don't exist.
Yeah. I will say though that, you know, I do think that there's a lot of obviously corruption in the government, but I will say that I have a few friends who are in Congress, and they say that the worst part of their job is trying to fundraise money, but they feel like they have to play the game in order to get anything done. And it's like that's still really messed up, that, you know what I mean? They're trying to you know, make these deals so that they can do something that's noble. Like, it shouldn't be that way. But I think there are some good eggs somewhere in that basket that are trying, that do want to make a difference and are just trying to figure out how they can best do that.
I feel like peeling the unions toward a more progressive approach is more in line with the general realignment that's happening in America. You know, It's a based on workers trying to get more people employed, you know, and get more people involved than the small. I know by the unions, one side of it is like you have to make your way into the union, but it is a union of workers. I think that hopefully there would be more leeway on those sides. But I, like anything, there's just such a huge number of industries around the way it is. They have built up around the way it is, so they will resist the change to the way it is at all costs. And you know what? They can pay all costs because they have a lot of money.
Yeah, that's right. So Larry Lessig talks about leaning into the green. So to pretty much, I think I'm doubling down on Hannah's point, which is they're not bad people. They're mostly, at least on the Democratic side, I think they're mostly good people. And so unfortunately, Tim Ryan is like the best example of it. So Tim Ryan was a young congressman who started coming on the Young Turks like 14 years ago, and went to Congress with great intentions. And is, I think he's a good guy. You know, I've known him a long time, but lately he is saying we should do tax cuts for corporations, and he is going to the right of Nancy Pelosi and trying to take her down that way. I think that that is leaning to the green. He doesn't mean to do harm, but he is doing harm. So I actually hold no ill will towards Tim Ryan. Probably after a segment I did on him, I'm not sure the feelings likewise, right? I don't, or mutual. But for me, it's never personal. And as much as Hillary Clinton, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, etc., those guys infuriate me, I'd be really surprised if Nancy Pelosi wasn't a good person. It's just that she's gotten lost in the bubble of money is awesome. And she will literally say, why should you remain in office? They've asked her recently when there were some challenges. She said, I raised the most amount of money. Like, but to me, that says I'm the best at leaning towards the green, if I'm being kind in how I describe it. But to her, she genuinely thinks like, what? No, I'm raising money. Yes, we know we're not going to, we are going to cut taxes on the rich and we're going to do a bunch of things. And to be fair to her, for now, she's saying she's going to fight that, right? But that is helping me to get money that is going to help Democrats win, except they forgot to win. Yeah. They keep losing and losing
just,
and losing.
Just that so, makes it harder for them to win. It's a harder sell for everything that's ever been said on this network.
What I hear from what you're saying is it sounds like a lot of these, especially people who have been in this for a really, really long time, it sounds like they sort of conflate money with support. Like yes. they're like, oh, you, I yes. think that's the issue.
And the reality is it is support. But from like the very people. Rich and powerful.
Yeah. Right. Well, the idea is now I've done fundraising, I can go market myself. Mm-hmm. I have the means to market myself to my voters. Because without it, I can't do it. Now, I think it's been proven that the total number, your dollar doesn't go as far in getting supporters anymore. Because there is a cell that says, like, big money's here to come take your. You know, supporting that guy, you should vote for me. And that cell is working. So I think that while it seems to them the dominant strategy is to raise as much money as possible, I think they have to raise more money to get as many voters as they did before. And that's just not a sustainable model.
Now, it's unbelievable how much they have to raise to run races. Millions upon millions of dollars.
Or say inflammatory things that are inflammatory enough to get coverage for free.
Well, there's technological. Yeah, I think there's technological solutions to raise the money. If money is what you still need, because there's still money in politics, there are technological solutions that allow more people to donate less and create a nice nest egg. And in doing that, they can still like represent that candidate who has that grassroots support as a candidate of the people. Mm. And maybe that's Pollyanna of me, but. I think you can still get some money, and it's like Bernie. It was like we had so much money from way more people at a smaller donation per person, and I think that's something that a lot of Americans are rallying around as a message.
Yeah, and look, that's the base of Just Democrats. Small donor money can beat big donor money, but so Just Democrats have raised like $1.85 million. Not anything right. to sneeze at. That's pretty good, right? On the other hand, there's 16 candidates now, if you include Ro Khanna as incumbent, and there's probably another 18 that's coming soon. So it's not nearly enough to run all those campaigns.
Yeah.
And so now, but we're just getting started. I mean, I'm not remotely pessimistic about it. I'm enormously optimistic about it. But it's what we need to do is do that in the short term and then get money out of politics. Because this is mental, asking people for money one person at a time, etc. We should stop the private financing of elections, because obviously if you privately finance them, they will work for private interest. That is right. by definition, right? You do public financing and we will save trillions of dollars because we'll end the fucking corruption, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, and then.
Also, they'll get more done.
Yes.
You know what I mean? If they're not trying to spend their time at like fundraising parties and like,
right.
you know what I mean? Like sipping champagne with like the free fufu or whatever, like they'll have time to, I don't know, like get some policy initiatives out.
So to that point, let me just, I guess, kind of begin to end on that note. So one is now folks that work in politics have a term for someone who's not self-financing their election. So the DNC looks for self-financers. Mm. You know what a self-financer is? A rich person who has enough money to finance their own election because they consider them viable. So they are eliminating everyone who isn't rich. If you are an anomaly and they're like, they don't take you seriously, they won't fund you in the beginning, but somehow you have shown in the polling that you actually have a chance to win, they call that person, that candidate, a working person. Isn't that amazing that a working person is an anomaly running for Congress? So now to go back to what you were saying about the fundraisers, etc. Two issues there. One is that if you spend all day long talking to the rich and powerful, again, it's not a diss on the rich. I just not
remotely. We don't want to be rich.
Yeah, God bless. It's America, right? But if you spend all of your time talking to the rich and powerful, you're going to be influenced by their opinions way more than you would be influenced by your average voter. So that's another problem with campaign finance. All right, and then.
Just really quick off what you were saying before, talking about people who could like self-finance. Like if you look at even just like the breakdown within Congress or the Senate or whatever, like it's predominantly white men, right? And so by allowing for the fact that we say, oh, you have to be able to self-finance and you have to have this network of already rich people and things like that, that serves as a filter already to advance white men further. And it already sort of gets rid of the diversity that we need and should have in our government.
Yeah, and I think they just break it down like, no, it's okay, there's black districts. No, that's not how diversity works, right? And I had a friend who considered running for office, and I've told this story many times before, and the only thing they asked him about is, how much money do you have, and how much money do the people you know have? They never, and he went all the way up the chain and even talked to the governor of the state that was a Democrat, they never asked him, what are your policy positions? Isn't that amazing and devastating?
Yeah.
And so, to go back one more time to Hannah's point about they're not, you know, they're sick of the phone calls and the fundraisers. Those who want to get money out of politics, we don't come to, you know, destroy the current congressmen and senators. We come to liberate them.
Yeah.
Right? And at some point, when we have enough momentum, you're going to be surprised at how quickly the pendulum swings, because they hate that their jobs are 50 to 70% fundraising. So who wants to do that? What a miserable job.
So
you know, just, no, like just think about it for a second. Not like, even, you know, we do it here because we finance the show through you guys and stuff, because we want our incentives aligned with your incentives, right? And we want to work for you guys instead of working for other interests. But imagine what they do, which is spending 4 to 6 hours every working day begging people for money. And it's specific people. Hey, Bob, it's good to talk to you again, but could you give me money? Hey, Susie, good to connect, but please give me money.
It's give that me money. On top give of me being money. Like, give me money, what do I have to do for you in return? So it's like a little bit of like, you know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. It's like, even that sucks, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you,
but
you
they
have these like weird
fucking love it. Oh shit, they fucking love it.
Oh, I disagree.
It's Hollywood. DC's fucking Hollywood. It's the same dynamic. People go from all around, they come to this one little town and they jack each other off. That's it, and they fucking love it, and they want the power, and it's a popularity contest. They want the most fans. And that's what it fucking is. I don't feel bad for them in the least.
No, I don't. I'm just saying.
I don't feel fucking bad for them in the least.
I'm not saying to feel bad for them, but
Jimmy Dore joins us on the phone.
I know. I'm sorry. It's just like that. It's just like they love fucking going into their little chambers, right? And they love like, and
no,
I get it.
Of course, anybody who goes into a government position, part of them will like have a power complex, 1,000%. But at the same time, like, I wouldn't say that they don't necessarily want to better utilize their time to get things done. Like, wouldn't you, like, I think, at least for the people that I know within the government, they would much rather have a bill pass with their name on it that is making a change that they believe in and that
their
party agrees with
their name on
it, rather than make millions of dollars to then try to do the exact same thing.
Like, but it's just like Hollywood in that, like, when they go there, they have like these grand ideas of what it's gonna be and how fantastic it's gonna be. And then after a few years, they're like, fuck it, I gotta work this way, and I gotta call this person.
Wait,
and
but
ask
then
them
you're contradicting
money.
Yourself.
That's
you
what
just it, said they love it, but then you're saying they
fucking
hate
love
it. After
yeah,
a while.
But that's the worst part, is it's like this weird spinning like descent into hell.
Yeah.
So I am figuratively and literally between you guys. I think that, yeah, sure, are some politicians, and I don't know if the percentage is 20, 40, or 98%, but like power hungry or interested in fame and all that stuff, some percentage, of course, are, right? I mean, that's they became politicians, not plumbers. Do some people genuinely love their little chambers? I just explained to you how much I loved walking through the tunnels.
Yeah.
So I would love my little chamber, but I would actually like to get things done. And I would get tremendous fulfillment out of a bill that actually helped people that I helped to get passed.
Right.
Who's gonna write it if you don't have lobbyists paying you money and then dropping it on your...
You're supposed to actually have a staff that writes it. I know these days people forgot and they just like, wait, where's my lobbyist? Who's gonna hand it to me, right?
Yeah.
So I think there are really, really decent people that are already there. I think there's decent people that are running now. But I am worried that, yes, after a while, the corrupting influence sets in and you forgot why you went. And so like the interview that I did with Kurt Bardella, who was Daryl Issa's communications director, and then who later went on to do PR for Breitbart, and then had a moment where he was like, what am I doing here? Who am I? Why am I here? Mm-hmm. And explained in the interview that you can watch on TYT Interviews. Well, if you're a member, which you are by definition, go check it out in the interview section of the membership stuff. Anyway, he said, we were in a game and I had to win the game. And yeah. So I kept fighting and fighting to win the game. Only after I left Breitbart, because you know the woman reporter was pushed and by Trump campaign manager Lewandowski, and they didn't back her, and a bunch of people left Breitbart at that time. He was in that group. He's like, and he was a consultant for them and didn't work internally. Anyway, he was like, I just like sat back for a second. And I was like, wait, what am I trying to win? Mm-hmm. Right? And so I think that that happens to a lot of people in DC, and not just the politicians, but a lot of times the reporters too. Yeah. I got to get a bigger byline. I got to get yeah. gets, and if I want to get a get, I need access.
Yeah,
yada yada.
And you're right, Hannah. That was a contradiction. I will say that I think they start. I would amend it to be that is the timeline of working in DC is like you're like fuck yeah, I'm gonna be famous, and then you're like this place is diseased, and then you get sad and lonely and end up just staying there for 60 years because it's you know. Incumbents have a huge advantage.
Yeah, and it's also addictive. You know, you get definitely get a little bit of precious, right? So
precious.
That's a much better word. Okay, and spooked us all out. All right, we got to run, guys. We will see you guys tomorrow. Remember, 11 a.m. I'm doing a live interview of Naomi Klein. Okay, we'll see you guys.